Today is March 9th. The philosophy of the Rav. The Rav, in a very public forum,
it's also a meeting with the T, right?
Yeah. In a very public forum, right after the Six-Day War, said that he would be in favor of, get this, I mean, he's probably being exaggerative with this, but that he would be in favor of, he didn't use the term giving back, he knew he was, but had to be very careful with his words. He said, giving up the Kotel. I would give up the Kotel if I felt that's what I would advise halachically. I am not I'm not a general. I don't send my sons to battle in Israel. And I'm not an Israeli citizen. But in terms of halacha, right? The halacha thinks that the kotel is not as important as one life. Okay? Now, in terms of rabbinic sources to cite for this, so to start with, I'm going to start with Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, our topic, and then I'm going to move to his brother, Aaron Soloveitchik. Okay. The Kotel is a thing. The Beis Mikdash is a thing. It's an object. An object is not as holy as a human being. A human being is a neshama. A neshama is an image of God. And therefore, the neshama, now he said, listen, but I'm not a general. It may be that giving up the kotel would cause more Jews to die. Right? We'll fight another war for it, maybe. I don't know. But I'm just saying is that, halachically speaking, the human life takes precedence over the thing. The Rav used an interesting Gemara to prove this point. You know that when it comes to Avelus, when someone Chas V'Shalom loses a parent, the day before the funeral is called Aminus. Then you have 7 days of Avelus. We don't really practice this so much, but the Mishnah Moed Katan seems to say that the first 3 days of Avelus are more harsh than the last 4 days. But we don't know that practice. All 7 days are treated the same. You with me? Okay. Then there's Shloshim. Then there's Rebbe Chodesh. And as you can imagine, the Avelus becomes weaker and weaker as you go on. Right? Shiva is stronger than Shloshim. But in the 3 weeks, it's the opposite. In the 3 weeks, we start with the Shiva Sefer Talmud. You shouldn't get married during that time. You shouldn't get haircut. You shouldn't shave during that time, right? Then you have the 9 days. Right? Ashkenazi and Sfarim treat this differently. You have the 9 days. And then you have the Shavua Shechalbo, right? You have Erev Tisha B'Av, right? The night of Tisha B'Av is harsher than the day, right? And all of a sudden, at Chatzos, what happens? You should see what happens in my shul, because my shul it's an old shul, it's over 100 years old, the building where it is, and the shul itself is 150 years old, and it's very grand. It's a simple, it's not a very big room, but it was Yossele Rosenblatt's shul. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, the most famous chazan of all time. Yossele Rosenblatt. Anybody ever? Does that ring a bell to any single person in this room?
No, but I can't.
Okay. Google it. So he was our husband. So on Tisha B'Av, everything looks like shoddy. We remove all the velvet, and all the lighting is low, and it's. And all of a sudden, Chatzos, everything is put back. Right? We don't wear tefillin in the morning, but tefillin in the afternoon. You have to sit on the floor until Chatzos, you can sit on a chair. Right? What happens at Chatzos? Why? And the whole thing is that, especially since, this is, Rav pointed this out also, and this is also where it's so important to know, because this is going to be like the first question on your final, is that whenever the Rav came up with like a chiddush, there were always two things at work. The Chiddush and then there's something residual. The residual point here is that there are two different dates given in the Bible for the destruction of the temple. One was the 7th of Av, one is the 10th of Av. So there were those who ridiculed. See, the Bible is can't get it tacked together. Wouldn't you think that some kind of redactor would have written the right date? Why does one say the temple was destroyed on the 7th of Av, and one says the 10th of Av? By the way, neither of them is the actual date when we're fasting. What's with that? The 9th of Av is not a date in the Bible. Did you know that? Crazy. So the Gemara answers that they actually broke through to the Har Habayis on the 7th. They didn't want to destroy it. It was valuable stuff up there. They pillaged a few days. And at the very end of the 9th, they put the Beis HaMikdash to torch, and they burned whatever wasn't valuable anymore, because whatever was valuable, they took away. And then it burned the whole 10th. But it started on the 9th. So based on this, the Rav wanted very much to, the Bible looks to be contradictory. I want to give the answer. You know, so good, the Gemara gives the answer. So, wouldn't you think, based on this teretz of the Gemara between the 7th and the 10th, that we should continue to be more machmir until the end of Tisha B'Av? What is this? What is this that's happening here on the afternoon of Tisha B'Av, that now we can put back the velvet, now you can put back the lights, now you can sit in a regular chair, you can sit on a cushion, now we have cushions on the bench, and we remove all the cushions. We're all brought to the back. Everyone's sitting on the floor, everyone's sitting, and chatos, put on your children. Why? This is when the Beis HaMikdash was actually destroyed. Talk to me now. This is what the Rav said. Why are we easing up on the restrictions of Tisha B'Av? Dafka, when the place was put to torch.
Can you say the possible answer for this? It's just like for mourning, after a person dies, right? We don't have like a leading up to that. So after the person dies, we have to then mourn, but we go in a steady decline. So for Tisha B'Av, since we're leading up to a specific moment that we're mourning to, we have like a crumb.
No,
yeah, we have a date. We have like a mountaintop, a peak. So we're leading up to that peak. We hit that peak.
So when is that peak? Why should the peak when we cut so? Shouldn't the peak be when they actually torch the Beis HaMikdash?
No, the peak isn't Chatzos. The peak we used to, by Chatzos, you're really second goes to Chatzos, you're going down towards them.
Why? Why shouldn't we continue going until the end of the Shabbat?
Because at the end of the day, you still have that, still have this idea of a downward sloping motion on the wheels.
Okay, I got it, but.
And we can't.
For Tisha B'Av, it keeps getting worse and worse. They broke through the siege, they pillaged Jerusalem, now they broke through Har Habayis, they pillaged through Har Habayis. Why should you start the descent at Chatzos on Tisha B'Av? Start the descent when the actual Beis HaMikdash was put to torch. So this is what the Rav said. And it fits with the Kotel. We just said about the Kotel. Okay, you know the Drash. It's actually, did anybody, do you say Tehillim by the day of the month, anybody here? Yeah, what's the first parable today?
Today
Ayin Tet. Ayin Tet. So Ayin Tet begins Mizmor La'asaf. Right? Ba'u goyim b'nachal asecha. Timu is hecha ukod shecha. Samu es Yerushalayim le'iyim. B'sar chas yidecha ma'of ha'shamayim. Right? So what's the question that Mara asks? In brachas. Mizmor la'asaf, kinu la'asaf mibayalei. Listen to the content I just said. Mizmor means a joyful song. We're singing zmiros about corpses lying out in the field, being eaten, devoured by vultures and animals. We're singing a song, a joyful song about the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. So what does it say? Mizmor la'asaf.
Because it was the temple and not the Jews.
Right. So no, but he does say that there were bodies. That was true, but that was from before. Is that once the temple was being destroyed, so the ketzef, the anger was calm down. Okay.
Let God's anger be assuaged by the destruction of a building rather than on different people.
You got the Rav's answer?
Rav's answer of why we ease up on Tisha B'Av, on the afternoon of Tisha B'Av. Dafka, when the Beis HaMikdash is put to the flames, is Dafka when we lighten up. And that's why he said, that was his riot for saying, if giving, remember, you don't see give back the Kotel. Yeah, the Jordanians controlled the Kotel for 18 years after the British mandate was up. We're not giving it back. It was always ours. Just we didn't control it. We gave it up. Right? So that's what he said. Because he said that
that fits well with the climate of the morning, because God's anger was ever increasing until that point.
Exactly. Okay, so that's the okay. And the fact that this was, remember, the RCA conventions are always in the middle and end of June. So you know the 6-day war started on June 6th, I think, right? So this RCA, the Rabbinical Council of America, right? The RCA convention was just after the 6-day war, a very public statement. The main focus of our political movement in Israel is to be a haven for Jewish life, to save Jewish lives. Okay. He wasn't oblivious to the religious significance of what the Kotel mentions. Are you familiar with the name Yeshayahu Leibowitz? Nachum Leibowitz's brother.
More controversial one.
Quite controversial. Very controversial. But I have a book of 3 years of his radio addresses. Brilliant. And they're translating that. He used to give a Thursday night 10-minute radio address on the parsha. Now they've been transcribed and translated there. You should try it again. It's called Notes on the Parsha. Notes. I have one version of this book, which is very valuable because it was. This is how it appears in the book. It's a thick book. The word notes is spelled like this. I don't know how they got away with it. Like 100 were printed like that before they corrected. And I have one of the original ones. Some people collect these kind of things. So Yeshayahu Leibowitz. He was so controversial. He considered that the Kotel was a bazaar. He said, well, "It's Kotel is just a thing, but we're idolizing it and glorifying it. It's just the outside wall, not even of the Beis Hamikdash itself, right?" So I'm just saying some of the controversy, but in its core, his sentiment was somewhat similar to what the Rav was saying, in that it's still a thing. Right. Do you remember I told you about maybe a week or two ago of a conversation I had with a sheik from Hebron, where he told me that you know that there was never a temple in Jerusalem. This is a good guy. I can't tell you his name because we're recording him. If his name was known, that you actually talked to a Jew about theology, they would kill him. It's all secret, and it's he's a good guy. But he knows, and he knows that I know, that there was never a temple of Solomon on what we call the Temple Mount. How do we know that? He said, and you know who else knows it? Moshe Dayan knows it, or every prime minister of Israel knows it. You're just fabricating. You're just making it up so that you can have a connection that far back in history. So you want to know how he knows this? Because if you really had a temple there, you would never have given it up.
You would have killed every Arab who was there when you controlled it. And you know what? He told us this, but this is already written in the books. The Arabs on the Temple Mount at the time were expecting us to do that. Right? They were expecting us to do that. They thought, of course they're going to do that. It's a holy place to you. Right? And now you control it. They didn't even put a fight there. There's also no fight in Hebron. 67 was in living memory of what they did to us in 1929. They're just the white flags. No battle of Hebron. Right? So they said, and you took over Harabias and you gave it up. He said, gave it back. And you just gave it up. You gave the keys. It's called the Waqf, right? You gave the keys back to Harabias, back to... Why did Moshe Dayan do it? Because he had the same sentiment as the Rav. Maybe, just maybe. We've been around here from 48 to 67, there's not even 20 years yet. Right? Maybe, just maybe, if you see some goodwill, right? Do you know what life was like for the refugees living under squalor, under Jordan, what they call the West Bank, and under Egypt and Gaza? No schools, no running water, no electricity. Life expectancy was, and literacy was non-existent. And when Israel built up these areas, they put up universities, they got electricity, they got running water. So Moshe Dayan thought, let's give them New York money. Let's give them up Harabias, right? And they'll start to see us in a different way. Didn't work. So now I tell you, this is what there was a meeting. I think there's a meeting in my shul, actually. Aaron Soloveitchik was presiding over this meeting, and he was trying to convince the rabbis. They wanted to make a statement about the Oslo Accords, right? Have you ever heard that there is a Gemara at the end of Yuma that says that if someone is deathly ill on Yom Kippur, it says Ma'achilin Oso Al Yidei Bekiyim, that you feed him accordingly by the advice of Bekiyim. Now, who are the Bekiyim? A Baki.
Doctors,
right? A doctor who's well conversant with what a person needs to survive. And Rav Chaim, the Rav's grandfather, was very makil on the laws of Yom Kippur in that and certainly Tisha B'Av and the other fasts. Right? And when he was asked, why are you so makil on Yom Kippur? He goes, I'm not makil on Yom Kippur, I'm machmir on Pikuach Nefesh. Right? In a famous story of Yisrael Salanter in 1858, during the cholera outbreak, he picked up filled a cup in front of everybody, poured the wine into a cup, and made kiddush on Kippur morning. And he sure drank it in front of everybody. And said, there's a cholera outbreak, we need our... People are dying like flies, we need our resistance to be built up, and we have to eat today. Amazing. I remember Gringo saying this story, I wrote it in one of my... I have a book coming out soon. Third week printed now. It's the first year of my COVID message. I was sending out a COVID message every day. In Israel, they called for a public fast day at the very beginning of COVID in March 2020. And I wrote this. This is no. We need our resistance to fight this thing. Right? The last thing we shouldn't even be fasting on Tanis Esther. Certainly not making another fast. Right. You need your resistance, right? Anyway, so Rav Chaim was machmir on the laws of pikuach nefesh. You get it? So like I said, that the kotel is just a thing, and things can easily be replaced, right? But here's the pshat. This is the chiddush. This is Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron, Rav Yosher Ber had passed away by then, right?
He was dead already 4 or 5 years by that time. And Rav Aaron said, this is my brother's pshat. Okay. Why didn't they just say ma'achilin al yidei rofin? You feed him by the doctors. Why did they say ma'achilin al yidei bekiyim? Feed him by the word of experts.
We need multiple experts in different fields.
Exactly. Okay, good. It's that Machilan Aydei Bekirim doesn't just mean someone who is expert in the laws of how to maintain someone's health who is deathly ill or may become deathly ill. Even the Suffolk Yikur of Nefesh is Dokha Shabbos Yom Kippur. It has to be someone who also is a bucky in the laws of Yom Kippur. You get it? Every doctor in the world is going to say to someone who's hungry, you should eat. Right? It has to be someone who knows the importance of Yom Kippur as well as someone who is a doctor. So that was the Rav's Kiddush, is that it's not just enough to say that the determination of what do we give up the Kotel. Because the generals, some of the generals, maybe even Moshe Dayan, he was the one who made the decision. He was the one who led the group to make the decision to give up Harabayas. But the decision to give up Harabayas can't just be made by people who are military experts. It has to be among them someone who's an expert in the laws of Harabayas, the importance of Harabayas. You know what I'm saying? In other words, that's sort of a little pushback to what I've been saying. You get it? So that's the pshat in the Bekiyim, is that it has to be more than just what meets the eye here of the strategy or the military prowess. Okay. All right, so the next section of our syllabus is on rationalizing mitzvahs. This is an important element of the Rav's philosophy, because the Rav felt that, and he was very dry about this, he felt that, and this goes back to something I did in the very beginning of the semester about the mathematical model and the aesthetic model of Jewish observance. When I say he was very dry, he was a brisker after all. And the brisker is, he's measuring, he wants to make sure that the tzitzis is the right size and the matzah is the right amount and the shiurim, and it's mathematical because it's measured, right? Mathematics is measured and it's usually quite fixed, right? 3 + 4 doesn't have a lot of different ways to figure out what that equation means, right? So the Rav felt that if something is philosophically true, it also should be halachically true. Right? So in this, the Rav was willing to admit that there could be symbolic elements to a mitzvah. Right? A mitzvah is more than just, this is meat, this is milk, don't do certain things with the two of them, but there's something more than that. But in the end, It's the actual mitzvah that determines the your behavior. The great genius of the Rav was to show how certain midrashim or even stories in the Torah, who's the famous Torah character who wanted more autonomy in determining how the mitzvah is done, and Moshe had to come down very hard on Korah. Korach, of course. And that's why Moshe knew what was going to happen to Korach's men if they were victorious. He sort of sets him up. He knows they're going to die. Right? Because this is, as far as Moshe understood, this might be the most dangerous rebellion of all time against us. Right? Because if Korach wants the autonomy to determine the mitzvah by how you feel or by the symbol of the mitzvah is going to be gone very quickly. right? So in that light, so now what I wanted to do is discuss some additional halachos. I told you that from here on end, to the end, I'm going to discuss some halachic decisions that, and in every instance, you know, I'm not going to tell you something you can look at the Shulchan Aruch or Mishnah Berurah or even Rav Moshe Feinstein's Tshuva. It's something that the Rav did that was, sort of unique. You know, right? To say the same Talmud Matar all year, that's unique. Okay? Why did he do it? Because he lived in America, and America needs rain all year. But where did he say the same Talmud Matar after Pesach? Was in Shema Kolein. Okay, you get it? I mean, that's the halacha in Israel, or, you know, let's say Pesach takes place in March 27th, that's as early as Pesach can fall. And they didn't get enough rain. So in Israel, there's a psak. You say the same Talmud Matar in Shema Kolein. Yeah. Most years, to say the same Talmud Torah in April, May is a curse in Israel. It's going to ruin the barley, it's going to ruin the wheat. You know, if it rains too hard. Okay. I'm going to tell you, share with you an interesting psak halacha. I knew someone who was a Baal Kriya in the Rav's shul. It was not a simple job to do. It was very makbid, not only on saying the word right, but on getting the truck right, and on getting the stress, the accent right. In other words, if the word is ve'ohavta, he'll correct you if you say ve'ohavta. Here again? Because actually, that I would correct too, because those are two different words. Ve'ohavta is mean you shall love. Yohavta means you loved. Okay? If the word is Anochi, the Rav would say that it's not Anochi. Okay? So to be a Baal Kriya, and I say that it's not a Baal Kori. The translation of the word Baal Kori means the husband of the one reading. Right? Baal Kriya means the master of the reading. It's not a Baal Tokea. Baal Tokea means the husband of the one long shofar. Okay? Baal Tkia is the master of the long of the shofar. Alright? So the Baal Kriya in the Rav Shul was always a very, a tense kind of position. Okay? So the Rav quoted the Rambam, in those Tfilah currently based. The Rambam says, you have to be Afilu b'dikduk os achas. You have to correct when someone's publicly reading the Torah. Right? And even including the Talmud. Right? The Ramah Paskins, that if a mistake even in the word doesn't change the meaning of the word, you shouldn't correct Bakriya. The Rav thought that was only in Megillas Esther or in the Haftorah, not in the Torah reading. Said if it's a public reading of Torah, you have to get it right. But here's an interesting thing, and I saw this Lamaisa, not with the Rav, but with Rav Schechter. I was with Rav Schechter, this goes back over 40 years. We spent the summers together in Tannersville. And there was a Bar Mitzvah boy at the shul, and he started making so many mistakes. It was so clear that he was not prepared. You know, Schechter instructed that men don't correct any of his words. And there was hardly anywhere in the whole lady where he got three words in a row without a mistake. He said, he's a Bar Mitzvah boy. Don't embarrass him. Who has a Torah's drop on him? When the Rambam said you have to correct afilu os achas, that's a professional who's hired and being paid. For the Bar Mitzvah. You said, the Bar Mitzvah boy, though, don't embarrass him. They'll keep correcting. I'm not hearing the right words. Okay, it's a Torah, it's a Rabbanan. Not embarrassing of a Mitzvah boy, is a Doraisa.
try to, if you can, do it, create a Torah someplace else. But this is also part of the very important part of Rav wrote a lot about this, is that Kriyas HaTorah in public is not a chiyuv on each and every individual. Kriyas HaTorah in public is a chiyuv on the tzibur. I'll give you two examples that Rav spoke about. One that was common in his time, and one that Poskim tried to prove from what the Rav wrote about this to what happened to the whole world 2-3 years ago. You know what I'm talking about. Shuls went 7, 8, 9 weeks without a Kriyas HaTorah. Right? Some moment. The last Kriyas HaTorah in my shul was Kisisa. He didn't have Vayakhel all the way through Vayakhel. Until Bamidbar. Bamidbar we went back. I think even maybe not so. No, I'm talking about during COVID 2020. We went that whole time. The shuls didn't have to meet. Right? So what the Rav is talking about, though, is this phenomenon. It's not happening this year, but when Pesach falls, the first day of Pesach falls on a Shabbos, right? The eighth day of Pesach in Chutz La'aretz is going to be the eighth day of Pesach. You're going to read Kol HaBachor. Go with me, stay with me, everybody. But in Israel, Pesach is over. So in Israel, they're already reading Parsha Shemini. And we in Chutz La'aretz are not going to get to Shemini until
next week.
Yeah. So for a whole bunch of weeks, we're one off. You get it? So anyone who travels to Israel between Pesach and whenever that's fixed, I don't know why they don't fix it right away, especially the leap year, right? They wait like to Matos Masei in some place, some 20 years, but that's fixed. So the Rav was asked, if someone's going to Israel during that time, do they have to somehow hear the missing Parsha? They're going to miss the Parsha when they come back.
Allah should do it.
They're going to hear one Parsha twice, because they can hear it in Israel, and then when they get back to America, they hear that coming Shabbos, they hear the same Parsha.
But if it's on the Shiva, then you're going to have to.
Oh, the Rav said, don't worry, don't bother. Now, even that being said, twice it happened to me, and one time it was fascinating. There was a whole bar mitzvah party that came to America, and they were traveling back to Israel. We made it; they qualified as a tzibur. There was over 10 men who were afraid they weren't going to hear the parsha, and we laid for them Shabbos mincha. And while everyone went down to Shalosh Shuras, someone quickly laid the whole parsha. Not with the leaders; we just laid the whole parsha. And I confess, in my shul on Simchas Torah. On Simchas Torah, right after all the Aliyahs, we laid by Yahil Hakude, by Yifrit Tzav Shmi, Acharemos Kedoshim, and one Bahar Mikros. I skipped Matadriyot Tzav. We laid by Yahil Hakude and all the Sefer by Yifrit and Parshat Bamidbar on Simchas Torah. One person did hold it. My son did hold it. It was great. Did it very quickly. No, he is. He just laid through the whole thing.
Well, don't you mean like Cohen to do the first thing and then shoot it all under him?
Yeah, someone already said came up also. Cohen did the first thing and someone did the last Aliyah. But we just laid it. I didn't really get involved. So it was a chiyuv on the tzibur. The tzibur didn't have these layings. So we laid it for the tzibur. But individuals, you don't have to hear this. This is why when the Gemara is thinking on, this is why when the Gemara in the Gila says that women can have aliyahs, right? Russian, Polo, Slovenian, Shiva says in the Sefer Megillah. But Kfar Nahagu, we already have the minhag that women don't get aliyahs. Remember the Gemara's reason? It's because Mishum.
Kibor.
So the Mordechai and the Rosh ask famous for obvious question. What do you mean because of Kibor HaTzibur? They're not hired. How could a woman get an aliyah and fulfill the obligation of a man to hear that laning if she's not hired to get the answer they give is the men in the room aren't hired either.
It's not a chiyuv on individuals, it's a chiyuv on the tzibur. So if they're not getting aliyah, it's a tzibur issue. So that's the this is the Gemara, the egalitarian minyan. If it's the conservative movement, there's nothing to talk about. They don't care about this. But if it's like some of these, what do they call them?
Partnership. Open Orthodox.
Open Orthodox, yeah. No, partnership minyan, whatever they claim to be Orthodox, they have separate seating, right? And women are laning, women are getting aliyahs, women are saying Kabbalah Shabbos, women are saying Sukkot and Zimra. But they themselves, they want to be out of traffic of Orthodoxy, so they don't have women saying Baruch Hu in Shacharis. They don't have women saying Chazaras HaShas. They don't have women saying Kedusha, because that's a Dover Shabbat Kedusha, which needs 10 men, and they're not a man. But they do, they lane because of Kuvah Tzibur, so the Tzibur gets to decide what's covered. Our tzibur thinks that this is the kavod of the tzibur, to have women and men together getting the leaves, right? Okay, the Rav was, if he were alive today, I'm sure he would have something to say about this, right? But there was already some shemets of this kind of issue coming up. The Rav wrote about something called the kavod, not just of the tzibur, but the bigger tzibur at hand, like the whole community, kavod hashchuna, kavod ha'olam, if you will. There's a Tosfos in Maseches Avodah Zarah that talks about this, of how your determination of your particular tzibur might impact on a tzibur that's down the block, or a tzibur that's across the street, or a tzibur that's in the neighborhood, where they're going to say, well, they're doing that. So it's sort of like a minhag ha'makom, if you will. I just want to stay on target of this, is that, and I want to start taking questions, the Rav felt that you don't have to, those individuals who are traveling to Israel, you don't have to hear the laning yourself. As long as your tzibur did. So why did I lane that whole Simchas Torah? Because our tzibur didn't have any of those questions. Did some of you recall something? Did you have it on Simchas Torah? Some shuls just did it when they came back. The first week they came back, they laned that whole year. It took an extra 45 minutes to an hour to lane everything that they didn't lane.
And I literally had the backyard minions. We never stopped.
Okay. Question.
Yeah, what about a Shnai Mitzvah? That's a chiyuv on...
But that's a learning chiyuv. That's a simple learning chiyuv. You could do at your home.
Work, yeah.
I could do it at home. And
it doesn't go by... It goes by your original location?
Some people fulfill Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum by reading through the parsha once with Targum, and then the second time you're reading through the parsha is when you hear it publicly. But you could do that on your own. Right. The Rav Din also wrote about whether Kriyas HaTorah is a din in Limud HaTorah or it's a din in reenacting Har Sinai. Right? No, we're so good at creating these categories. If it's a reenactment of Har Sinai, then there might be nafkaminas lahalacha about how you're supposed to stand there. Should the Ola read along with the Baal Kriya? Should he just stop him? Because we didn't read with God, we just stood there and listened. Right? But if it's a learning experience, you have to learn. You have to read the Torah with him. Or if it's a recreation of Har Sinai, the people in the tzibur should stand while Kriya is laying. And you have some people, they stand near the bima, near where they're laying, and they come very close by. Others say, no, I'm learning Torah, I'm going to sit. Okay, yes?
What if you fall into an issue with a woman laning? What if you fall into an issue of
Kalisha?
Kalisha, yeah.
Like,
they hold.
I'm still singing.
It doesn't apply.
Yeah, they're going to hold that the Gemara in Brachas, in the Chav Daled, is only that a man shouldn't hear a woman singing while he's saying Kriyat Shema.
Doesn't have to say that. The source of things, the initial
Kodesh
by laning,
would
be much more expensive than
Shani Kodesh.
It's
kind of
Alphos High. Yeah,
there are
Chuvis already before
that.
I'm trying to find his name.
Sweet
Age.
No, as before, it's Hiram Olrosa, Meron Eliot.
has that same reasoning for Kalia Shah and also thinks that Kalia Shah is a general issue of hearing women speak.
So, all right, so Lemaitre, though, it's there are many who say it's still an issue, but I'm saying if you wanted to find where it's not an issue, you can find it. Yes?
So, when you say it's not an issue, isn't there an idea that anything that's dvarship of Kedusha, like the dollar, whatever it is, there's no issue of Kedusha?
Again, that's part of the same.
Yeah,
you have what to rely on if you want to come. The Rav was very, very much against using like minority opinion here, minority opinion there. I could create a Bible class with all of the controversial statements made by Radaki, Ben Ezra, Ramban, Rashbam, even Rashi. Rashi has some very radical statements in his Pei Shalat Torah. And you think this must be a printer's error, right? And where did he get away with this? If he wasn't Rashi, someone would have banned his book from this, right? So you can create something with a whole bunch of minority opinions and we start a chavila. But so you have to be always very careful about that. Okay, I'm going to draw down now to. The Rav was very, very interesting. He paskin that a deaf person can lean the Torah. A person who can speak, but he lost his hearing. Mamish can't hear anymore. He wasn't born deaf, because then he probably couldn't lean very well. But he lost his hearing. And Mistama, it fits in with everything we've been saying here. You can read Megillas Esther, because the din is on the tzibur. Right? But now, usually we say Shomea Ke'one means I can fulfill your obligation of Kiddush.
If you could,
I'm obligated. Now, even if I already made Kiddush, there's a din in Arevus, right? Not in Shlichus, it's not making me a Shliach, but a din in Arevus. Ko'od that any other Jew didn't do this mitzvah, I still have a piece of me that needs to do this mitzvah. It's a beautiful thought. The Rosh mentions this the first time in the Brachos, in the third paragraph. So that you in Kiddush, Havdalah, things like that, the person has to, like, you can't have a deaf person blow shofar. Because he's not being Yotzei on the shofar. So yeah, how can you fulfill someone else's?
Since
Kriya Satorah is a Chiyuv on the Tzibor, it's not a Chiyuv on me per se. It's a big Kiddush. This goes beyond everything we've been saying until now. Because this shows that, you know, the it's one thing that we don't have the chiyuv on an individual chiyuv, but this is the person who's taking care of the tzibur. Surely he has to be on the same level.
When you want to put someone that he knows for a fact he's saying the words correctly.
This is the mashmiya of the Torah reading can be someone who doesn't hear himself. Along the same lines as the Gemara Megillah, the Chav Gimel, that I mentioned before, that says a katan or an isha, even though they're not chayav, how can they fulfill the obligation of the men in the room of the drabanan obligation to hear the Torah on Shabbos or the Thursday if they're not chayav themselves? The answer is because it's the men in the room don't have a chiyuv either individually. It's a chiyuv on the tzibor, and if there is a this is what about the Israeli travel, which is what got us on this topic to begin with.
What if it was a woman? Would that make a difference?
In the fact that it's a woman, or the fact that it's a
woman? No, the deaf woman would be fine for that other tzibur just the same. But the Rav was against that because it's
not Marisa. So it's a cover of the tzibur.
Okay. All right, guys, I think that will cover us for today. I'm going to make my way down. Please finish off this. There's some good, very good...